When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Our job as coaches is to help the team to create enough chances, Ralf Rangnick says. The number of clear chances we had today had to be enough to win a game like this. Well, he's right, and copy and paste it. Manchester United dominate yet another game and yet again come away without a victory. United are fourth in the Premier League, but with several more games played than top four rivals Arsenal and Tottenham, we're nothing but a placeholder for now. An all too familiar tale is developing week on week for Rangnick's United. Create chances galore, but miss the barn door. Over in Madrid, it was an entirely different prospect, to be fair. A 1-1 draw was a fantastic result given the level of performance, particularly the first half performance, and Antony Elanga really made his mark at the Wanda Metropolitano in front of 3,500 Reds up in the gods in the away end, having a great time. And then now, well, comes Manchester City. A chastening defeat came at Old Trafford back in November, led to the sacking of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer eventually. What will happen this time? Well, we're looking at City's 7 defeats this season for lessons as to how to beat Pep Guardiola's league-leading team. Welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast to Series 7, Episode 26. With me, Harry Robinson, and Jack Tate alongside me, as always. Thank you to our patrons for their support in helping this podcast happen. Let's get started, Jack, with the Watford game. A fifth draw for United in 7 games. The simple truth of it is another 5-0 performance, but we've drawn or lost the game, which is what is happening again and again.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, we had an episode that was named Jekyll and Hyde, and this week was a pretty perfect summation of a Jekyll and Hyde week for United, because we come away from our midweek clash with Atletico Madrid, having played really quite terribly and thrilled to come away with a draw, what is a decent result after a very, very bad performance. And then we've gone home to Old Trafford in the Premier League and put in one of our best performances, certainly the first sort of 50, 60 minutes of the season, and come away with a massively disappointing 0-0 that we somehow managed to not win. I mean, yeah. The Watford game, it's so disappointing. And it's the themes that have been recurring now for quite a few weeks. And to be honest, I find it hard to critique Ralf Rangnick for any of it. The Atletico Madrid game is a different story, but Watford, I thought we were set up perfectly. We carved through Watford with absolute ease for the entire game, you know, pretty much at will from any part of the pitch, created so many chances, so many big chances to score, and just for whatever reason, couldn't find the back of the net. I mean, despite the fact that we dominated the game, created so many big chances, we only had 3 shots on target.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes results like this happen where you come up against just an inspired goalkeeper, and you get some bad luck, defenders are making blocks left, right and centre, and the ball just doesn't, it just won't go in. And you have days like that. This wasn't one of those days.
Oh, no.
This was completely of our own making. Well, you know, did not put the ball in the net.
Yeah, we all remember kind of those inspired performances, whether it's Tom Heaton at Burnley or Ben Foster has had them.
Tim Krul very often for Newcastle.
Yeah, there's a whole string of keepers who are, their best performances of their career have been at Old Trafford in games where they've got results. But the sad thing was, I think I've very rarely seen, at least in recent years, a side, even in recent years, in fact, given how many teams have come away from Old Trafford with a result, whether it's a point or 3, I've rarely seen a team do so little to get a result at United. Watford weren't good. We played through them so easily. They just stood there. It was so easy to create chances. This wasn't kind of a brilliant defensive performance. As you say, not a great goalkeeping performance from Foster, because it didn't have to be. I hardly remember an out
of
the ordinary save.
Of note, I think. The Fernandes one-on-one, that was about it.
Right, yeah. It wasn't difficult to create chances. And yet, as you say, and in fact, the difference between this and the and possibly the Southampton game or the Middlesbrough game or the Brighton game is there were poor finishing in all of those, but this was the one where we just couldn't hit the target at all, let alone hit the target for the key chances. 22 shots on goal, 3 big chances, statistically big chances missed. We hit the post, we scored an offside goal, we missed other good chances, there were penalty shouts. it was just poor execution of chances. As you say, Rangnick is completely blameless in this for now. He obviously has to find a way to sort the finishing out. But, and this isn't even a matter of kind of effort or desire. It's just the finishing is so off from everyone in the team.
In some ways, the results like this are sometimes even more disappointing than the actual bad performances that we've put in, you know, like against Atletico Madrid or like the first half against Brighton a few weeks ago, because you just left scratching your head at A, how this happened, and B, what do you do about it? You know, I'm not being funny, but the people who are getting these chances for United aren't squad players. They aren't our centre backs or central midfielders.
I mean, it's Cristiano Ronaldo. Let's have it right.
It's Cristiano Ronaldo, Bruno Fernandes, you know, Jadon Sancho, whoever it might be. Like, these are, at least in terms of their finishing, world-class players that should be able to finish these chances with no worries at all.
Yeah.
I just looked on FOTMOB. Bruno Fernandes alone had over one XG as a single player. It's just baffling how we weren't able to actually score. And like I said, this wasn't, I don't even think there was bad luck involved in this really either. You know, this wasn't like we just kept getting the bad break of the ball, or we kept hitting the post, or, you know, blocks were flying in. Like, it was just poor finishing. And to be honest, there wasn't a huge pattern to it either. I wouldn't say players were being greedy. There was that one where Fernandes forced a save from Foster. Maybe he could have squared it to Ronaldo. Although, to be fair, watching it in real time, I didn't even notice that Ronaldo was there. It was only after the fact. So, you know, I don't think it was a massively obvious one to square. I don't think players were being too greedy. They took shots when they needed to. It was just poor execution.
I think that's what's different as well. I mean, I guess it's a positive. It's hard to find, it's hard to kind of define it as a positive in these times. But the positive is we're now seeing the United team create chances kind of in the right way, the way that we want them to. A lot of that, I think, is down to Jadon Sancho, whose decision-making is a level above the rest of the team in terms of that. When the opportunity isn't there for him to get through the defence, either with the pass or by taking his man on, he doesn't rush it. He comes back and keeps the pressure up. And that's why I think we've seen this a lot more recently. When Sancho's been starting, we've seen us really put teams under pressure. Obviously, he was dropped from or rested from the start of this, but he did it when he came on. But even the rest of the team, I think Alanga showed it in parts. I think, I mean, even Bruno had a couple of his typical kind of frustrated long shots, but even he was better at it this time. This wasn't a problem of the type of chances we were creating. It really was just poor execution. And I mean, just to emphasize that point, Tottenham beat Leeds 4-0 and had a lesser XG than we did.
I mean, anytime you create over 2 XG in a game, you'd expect to win. You know, that is,
it is by a lot as well.
Yeah, by a lot. You know, I know
the games XG, where you win 4 or 5-0 are the ones where you create that, because obviously XG underrates goals a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously.
And the whole point of paying, you know, massive amounts of money in transfer fees and wages to players is that you buy players who are going to outperform their XG because they're good players and they can finish. You know, I think what was it in the end? It was like 2.8 XG, I think, across the 90 minutes, which is huge. And that doesn't even, I don't think, includes the offside goal, right? Because it only counts shots that actually count.
Don't think so, yeah.
So, I mean, then that was basically a tap-in. So that's probably another at least 0.5, 0.6 to add to that as well. You know, it's just, it's baffling. I thought, annoyingly, obviously the result is annoying in itself, but doubly annoying to this is that, actually, to your point, Harry, I think this was one of the most encouraging performances I've seen from United in terms of creating chances, not through just one player doing something amazing. You know, it felt like, albeit Watford, like you said, were there to be carved open. They were so, so easy to play through.
And but, just, you know, the best example of that was the Alanga chance where he drove in and then Pogba did the back heel. Yes, those are moments of individual brilliance, but it was several in succession. That wasn't just one person taking someone on. That really nice move, and it really deserved the goal.
Yeah.
At the end of it.
And the other one as well was the offside goal. I thought was brilliant as well. Alanga drives inside. Ronaldo shows for the ball short. When Alanga doesn't give it to him, he then spins in behind when it goes wide to Tellez. You know, that's exactly the kind of moves that we want. And we are starting to see it, but it's just that we can't sort of enjoy it because we aren't actually putting the finishing touches on them. I thought Alanga, for me, had his best game in a United shirt in terms of his general output. I thought he was very, very good.
Yeah.
He was so much tidier on the ball, which was probably partly because of the amount of space he was being given. But I thought he was very, very good. You know, these are positive signs that we should be sitting here, you know, praising Rangnick for how he's managing to make some improvements to this team, and yet we have to just sit here and berate the fact that we can't finish.
Yeah, the fifth worst conversion rate in the Premier League this season, behind Brighton, which is blatantly obvious to anyone who's watched them. Wolves are a little surprising, mainly, and Burnley and Norwich, less surprising.
God, I wonder what would happen if we hired Graham Potter. We'd never score a goal again.
Yeah, there's plenty more stats to outline just how bad our finishing is, but let's focus in on Ronaldo. He is missing too many. 14 goals in his first 20 games, one in the past 10 games, and he's had 36 shots in those games. And I'm a little torn on this, because I think the general feeling around United fans is that he is kind of hindering the team at the moment, both in the way that he affects how we can play and also the fact that he's not scoring. If you're going to have Cristiano Ronaldo in your team, then he has to do his job, which is score goals in bucket loads. He's not doing that. 14 in 20. Yeah, we can do that. That works for us. One in 10 certainly doesn't. And yet, on the other hand, he's only inches away. He is hitting the post. He is being just offside. He is drawing good saves. And so you think, these fine margins, and look, we obviously want to get rid of those fine margins, and ultimately, given how many chances we're creating, we shouldn't have to rely on fine margins. But I think I can't decide whether he's just a couple of inches away from suddenly finding his goal scoring form again.
Yeah, I have a really hard time sort of deciding where I come down on Ronaldo at the moment, because in the immediate aftermath of the game, I was like, he has to be dropped. You know, he's not playing well enough.
Yeah.
If he isn't, and this has been true of Ronaldo for quite a few years now, if he isn't contributing goals to the team, he isn't doing much of anything, because he is very much a sort of poacher of a striker at this point. You know, his general play hasn't been great for quite a few years now. So part of me thinks, well, he hasn't scored, you know, like you said, one goal in 10 games, get him out of the team. But, well, two things are sort of putting me off that. One is the fact that with Cavani injured, we have pretty much no replacement for Ronaldo, unless we maybe push Bruno to a false nine or maybe played Rashford up front. But second, and sort of more to the point, is that it's not as if Ronaldo isn't making the chances, and he's not always making them for himself, but his movement and stuff is still excellent. And you would expect that he will eventually start putting some of these chances away. It's just, how long can you continue to put him in the team when clearly, for whatever reason, whether it's confidence, whether it's just bad luck, it just isn't going well for him at the moment.
Well, what's strange as well is the confidence and the attitude he seems to have towards games. I'm not saying it's a bad attitude deliberately from his part, but you can tell how frustrated he is, especially, I think, watching from the stands. Every time when the TV's kind of cutting away to a replay, Ronaldo's kicking posts after every chance and holding his head in his hands. There was a moment where Fernandes kind of came over to Ronaldo, was just still standing next to the post a couple of seconds after missing, and Fernandes dragged him back onto the pitch and made him run back, and he's geeing up the fans, which he never used to do. He never kind of, part of the frustration in the first half of the season for United fans was Ronaldo just didn't seem to care about the supporters. He wouldn't clap supporters at the end of away games. He wouldn't even do it as he was walking off at the end of home games. And now you're seeing completely different. You're seeing him in the middle of games turn to the Stretford end and gesture to get people going afterwards. You're seeing him clapping them. It's clear there's a kind of attitude and mentality change, and that he's struggling with his confidence. And it's incredible for him, Ronaldo.
Yeah, it's kind of jarring, to be honest, because this is a player who I think has always been so good at sort of internally making everything work.
Yeah.
You know, he hadn't ever struck me as a player that needs any sort of encouragement or motivation from outside.
Exactly,
and it feels like he's sort of searching for that at the moment. And obviously we're speculating there, but just the way that he is just much more vividly and outwardly emotional, I guess, you know, it is quite jarring to see. I think with Ronaldo, it is tough because of the lack of options that we have outside of him. And also just with the fact that, like I said, he is getting into these positions, but if he isn't scoring, like, I'm not going to lie, it's shocked even me as someone who expected Ronaldo to come in and offer very little outside of scoring. It's shocked me just how bad his general play is.
Yeah.
You know, his dribbling is pretty much non-existent at this point. There were a few times when he got the ball in space against Watford, and he basically can't dribble at this point in his career. Every time, pretty much every time he drops deep to pick up the ball, the only thing he can then do with it to keep it is just to pop it back to whoever passes him first time. And that's fine, but that is literally the limit of his game at the moment. And so, you know, we're managing, I think, to play well, I guess, in spite of that. And he is still getting on the end of a lot of these chances, even if they aren't going in. But I think there does come a point where, like, you just need a striker that can offer a bit more, because any time he gets the ball, things break down. You know, it's in sort of our build-up chain, he is the weak link at the moment. And if he isn't putting the ball in the back of the net, then it's not even just that he doesn't offer much. He sort of actively takes away from our build-up.
Yeah, we're going to talk about how we approach the City game, and with Cavani almost certainly out of that one as well. We are going to talk about how Ronaldo could fit into that team and do a good job. But yeah, it's certainly something. I'm sure Rannick's frustrated at it. Ronaldo's clearly frustrated at it. The whole team are. And as you said much earlier, it's an even more frustrating one because it's not clear what the obvious solution is to it. Very quickly before we'll do a youth loan and women's roundup and then move on to the City game. End of February, it's been a month with kind of a few different standout players to normal. Fernandes, perhaps, with a few goals and some good performances. But the kind of obvious standouts have been Alanga, Sancho and Varane. If you had to pick a player of the month for February,
I'd go with Sancho. I think he's just been the consistent standout. Varane and Alanga have been good in moments and have had some very good games. But I think just for the consistency that Sancho has shown throughout the last month or so, I think he has been sort of at the forefront of maybe not some great results, but some much better performances. And I think is really starting to string together some of the type of performances that we always wanted from him. So I think he'd be pretty clearly my pick for the player of the month. I think there's a decent chance Elanga wins because of the Atletico goal that's sort of sticking in everyone's mind, though.
Yeah, that clearly sways it. Sancho's two assists against Leeds and one goal against Middlesbrough are not really just reward for how good he's been in February. It is that consistency and how just his impact on the team has been huge. He's been man of the match in several games in February. And Varane, I think we had this conversation, if not last week, then the week before, about how much he was, how obvious it was that he was missed when he's not playing. And he has had a very good month. And Alanga, the storyline for Alanga's February is brilliant. Start of the month, missed the penalty to send United out of the FA Cup, and he's coped with that really well. And come out of February stronger than he went into it, which is incredible given what happened at the start of the month. Very quickly, youth loan and women's roundup, and then we're going to preview the City game and look at how City have been beaten this year by Tottenham, by Chelsea last year in the Champions League final, and also by Palace and Leipzig and a couple of others, to see how Ralph Rangnick might be able to triumph over Pep Guardiola at the Etihad. So at the Academy, the under-18s are through to the FA Youth Cup semi-final. Alejandro Garnacho scored two to come from behind against Leicester City at Old Trafford last Thursday. United will now play Wolves on Wednesday, the 9th of February at 7 p.m. at Old Trafford, and fans are going to be encouraged to attend that one again. Garnacho quickly making himself a star of the competition. He scored against Everton. He scored, if my memory served me right, he scored in every game so far. And this under-18s team hasn't kind of had a star at the moment, but Garnacho is picking up that tagline already. Some great performances and a whole different variety of goals that are worth going online and searching out and watching. He'll possibly be playing just after we record this as the under-19s take on Borussia Dortmund in the last 16 of the UEFA Youth League. An exciting game. The winner of that will play the winner of Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid. That game is tonight. If you want to find out the result, you'll know how to. It will also be covered by me on the United website, so you can go there for full coverage of it. The under-23s had a good 5-2 win against Derby at the weekend. Alvaro Fernandez starring in that, two assists and the opening goal in a very good second half performance from him. Neil Wood, the manager, wasn't too pleased with the first half, but a good win in the end for United. In low news, James Garner scored again for Nottingham Forest, helping them to a 2-0 win against Bristol City. He's having a great spell for Steve Cooper's team. Ethan Laird finally made his Bournemouth debut after injury prevented him from doing so before. He made the switch from Swansea City to Bournemouth in January. Teith Chong is back in action for Birmingham after a few months out. He picked up a torn thigh injury, I think, in late October, has been out since then. And there's been a few injuries recently for Loneys who were doing well. Dylan Levitt, Reece Devine, Axel Twanzabe, and Ted Edmengi all out with injury for a little bit. United Women suffered a 4-1 defeat to Manchester City in the FA Cup on Sunday. The team were looking for revenge for a disappointing WSL defeat against City before the international break earlier in February, but they didn't find it. They had gone ahead through Katie Zellum, but were thrashed in the second half, and it's a very disappointed squad at the moment. They're out of the Conti Cup to Chelsea and out of the Women's FA Cup to City. All focus on the WSL now. They're in fourth. They need to get into the top three, and the one to overtake will be Tottenham Hotspur, who are 2 points ahead with the same number of games played, and United have a better goal difference, but they do need to find form again. It was a really difficult February for them. Okay, Jack, let's move on to the City game. We've got a question from one of our patrons, Corey Lennox, who says, how would you like to see us set up against City? He says he doesn't think five at the back is such a crazy idea. I know we haven't seen it a lot recently, but it seemed to work okay against City when Ole was around. Well, it's a good point. First of all, the significance of this game, because of our recent form, we now need to find several memorable victories if we're going to finish in the top four. And perhaps one at the Etihad could be the first. We've got a great record there recently. A really, really good record there.
Yeah, the Manchester Derby seems to go through some like swings of patterns of results. There was a period sort of in the early to mid 2010s where it felt like City just had the wool over us. Now in the last few years, it seems like the away team just wins pretty much all the time. I mean, how many times has Pep beaten us at the Etihad? It's not much, is it? Maybe twice?
Well, I saw a great fact from Jay Motti on Twitter this week, that Dan James has more Manchester Derby wins at the Etihad than Pep Guardiola.
nothing more needs to be said then. Yeah, I've got to say, out of the big games that United play every season, which in my head are really sort of Liverpool, City, Chelsea, and then obviously Leeds in the last couple of seasons, of the ones against the sort of good teams, United City always seems to be the one that delivers the most when it comes to entertainment. Like the games against Liverpool in particular recently haven't been very good.
I was just going to say, which is funny, because before Ole came, and certainly under Van Gaal and Moyes, they could be terrible games.
Yeah.
There was a couple under Van Gaal, the 4-2 win that we had, which was good. I think they beat us 4-1 under either Van Gaal or Moyes, but there were a lot of nil-nils where Chris Smalling had good performances at the Etihad and we came away with a point.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because I think it was so easy, especially under Mourinho, to just sit back and that was it. Like there was no sort of urgency to put anything on to City. Whereas I think under Ollie, he sort of changed the dynamic of those games that we were still happy to sit back, but it was so much more aggressive when we did manage to win the ball back, and it made City have to think twice, I think, before sort of committing so many bodies forward. So they generally are good games. I think this not just the City game, the next sort of month or so is a big piece about redemption, to be quite honest, because these are a lot of the games in which United's, you know, we got humiliated, quite frankly, back in the first half of the season.
We didn't manage it against Watford, that's for sure.
that's true.
Possibly against City. Yeah, I mean, the one we really need it against is probably Watford and Liverpool, the two big ones, but Liverpool, the big one. And I can't see us reciprocating what they handed to us at Old Trafford in October, to be honest. Yeah, let's look at how City have been beaten this season, because they don't lose many games every year. We have been ones to beat them in the past. And I think under Ole, actually, teams often look to how we played City and beat City and try to kind of copy that. It was quite an obvious strategy at times, where we'd sit back and counter-attack. We'd try to have very little space between the defence and midfield, and then you'd have fast players up front with a front three of James, Rashford and Martial, and you'd play those long balls over the top for them to run onto and try and beat City for pace, which often worked. A little different now, partly because of the United team, partly because of the manager, and because City are, I'd say, better than they were a year ago. I think in terms of, I look at City now and think it's harder to beat them than it was last year and the year before, even though they've obviously had loads of success in that time anyway. But should we look at the most recent defeat for them first? The Spurs won. Conte's team beat them 3-2 at the Etihad on the 19th of February, not long ago. What did you make of that game?
So I wish we had Harry Kane. Very much. I think what Spurs have done really well against Man City is they've just stopped them from being able to play through midfield too easily. I thought, you know, Spurs don't have a particularly great midfield, but I think because they played three at the back, they managed to just squeeze all the space because the defenders were able to push up. It's something that we've used before against City as well, playing three at the back, which means your centre-backs can be more aggressive in stepping out, shut down that space in midfield. Because to me, that's where City hurt you. They're a strange team to play against because the danger doesn't come from the most advanced player normally.
Yeah.
If you look back at most of the times that City have scored against us, well, they have a history of scoring set pieces against us, which is ironic considering they aren't a set piece team at all.
Yeah.
But from goals from open play, so many of the successes that they've had against us have come from runners from deep, from midfield. And that is, I think, where you have to play the game. I think what Spurs did really well was they stopped that from happening because they were able to shut down the space in front of them. And then their fullbacks, their wingbacks were able to take care of the wide players. Because that's the danger, right? When you push up with your centre-backs too high, especially if one of them is stepping out very often, then there's space left in behind for the wingers to run in. So you need to be able to have wingbacks that can handle those wingers one-on-one and then gives your centre-backs freedom to step out. And Wan-Bissaka and Shaw, to a lesser extent, but especially Wan-Bissaka, has proven that in the past with Sterling.
Yeah, Wan-Bissaka is an interesting one to talk about, and we'll come on to maybe our specific kind of lineup in a couple of minutes. But yeah, what you're saying is kind of you need to control that central area, or not control it, but squash that space in the middle that City can have to play in.
Yeah,
and I guess there's a couple of ways to do that. And I think to take another game, I also looked back at the Champions League final last year, Tuchel against Guardiola in Lisbon. And to take, first of all, Spurs, as you say, kind of squeeze that space by playing five at the back. They had an extra person in defence. Emerson Royal kind of didn't have a specific person to mark. And actually that part of it didn't work incredibly well. But what they did do is have loads of players in that area outside the box, forcing City to go wide and to cross, which is kind of obvious because Bernardo is the tallest member of their front three, and he's 5'8". They weren't kind of a great crossing team even when they had Sergio Aguero in the side, and now they don't. They're even worse. They had 34 crosses against Spurs, and only 7 found a target in the box. So that's clearly a key tactic. Interestingly, Spurs didn't try and have that small gap between defence and midfield. They let City have players in there, but instead, Harry Kane dropped deep, sat on Rodri, the defensive midfielder, and then one of their two central midfielders, Bentancur and Højbjerg, would push up onto the centre-backs. So this is where there's the two options. Spurs pushed up onto City centre-backs to stop them playing the ball into midfield. Chelsea, on the other hand, had three strikers. They played a 3-4-3, and their three strikers kind of blocked the passing lanes into the midfielders. So the two options are either you put the centre-backs under pressure or you mark the midfielders. You obviously can't do both. So United have a couple of options there. I don't think there's anything... Have we ever seen a team try something different and succeed against City in that sense by trying to stop the ball get to their midfielders?
I don't think so, to be honest. I think trying to put pressure on City high up the pitch is just such a risk because they are so good on the ball. Even all the way back to Edison, it feels like they are so good at drawing teams onto them. And if you do that and get beaten on the press, then if they have space to operate in, they'll absolutely kill you. So I don't think that's a tactic worth really pursuing against City, simply because against most teams, I think pressing high up the pitch is kind of worth it in the risk reward scenario. And you'd back yourself to recover even if they do beat the press before sort of any sort of major chance can develop. But I think City just moved the ball so well. If you do get beaten with that initial press and you get 4 or 5 players taken out of the game, it can be so, so devastating. So
I think that's what was...
Something like what Spurs did with Kane.
I was just going to say, I think that's what was interesting about Spurs in that they didn't make Kane the kind of front-running player. It was one of the two centre-mids and then the other would stay deep, which kind of gives you more flexibility in terms of both sides and also a kind of a bit of... solidity by knowing that Kane's always going to be there and one centre midfielder is always going to be there with one running forward, a bit more solid and a bit less risk of doing what you're saying, which is playing for us, which is what they've done at Old Trafford a lot in the past.
Yeah. It also helps having Kane that little bit deeper on Rodri also helped when it came to turning the ball over as well, because I remember there's been games against Man City when we have been trying to play this style under Solskjaer well, you know, we'll sit back and then try and be really aggressive on the counter attack. Sometimes the issue when you have, say, two or three players that are quite high up the pitch waiting for the ball to be turned over and then for the out ball is that it can just be so difficult to get them the ball because you have so little space when you win it in such a congested area that often it is just sort of a clearance that you've then got to go and win. And if Rodri is there left in all kinds of space and it takes sort of a 30-yard pass to bypass him and get it to the forwards, it can then be really hard to ever win the ball back and sustain it. So I think the other thing that was good about Kane being that little bit deeper was it meant that the ball stuck a little bit more. It meant that Rodri didn't have so much time to sort of recycle everything because Kane was always there, even if he didn't win it, putting him under pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in terms of attack, it helped massively as well. Kane was barely in the box in that game. He sat deeper, let people run off him. Kulusevski and Son were kind of played in front of Kane, basically. And they had great pace. But also, I think what was impressive about them was how quickly they could tell when Spurs won the ball. Because if you can get an advantage in your head, knowing that your team's about to win the ball and start your run already, then you've got what it takes to beat a really quick defender like Kyle Walker. And if you don't, and you can't beat him for pace, which very few people can, then you're not going to succeed. But Son did have that when, as soon as Spurs won possession, and even before, he was already off. So he had a head start on Walker.
Yeah.
And that's something that an in-form Rashford definitely could do.
Yeah.
He's obviously not in form. And maybe that's a kind of chance to take on our lineup. Maybe we should decide what we think our approach should be. Should we go for the kind of really narrow 3-4-3 that Chelsea did and Tuchel did and kind of make City play really narrow, force them out wide? And that's kind of what Mourinho used to do at Inter as well. We don't care if you have the ball on the wings because you're just going to cross it and we'll beat you in the air anyway. So have it, but you can never have it in the middle. Or do we go for what Spurs did, which is still kind of let them have the ball on the wing, but have that kind of deeper forward, slightly more of a kind of hybrid formation than the kind of more solid 3-4-3.
I think based on what United have at their disposal, I think I prefer the Spurs sort of method. I think the difficulty with playing like that is that the player that probably would be doing that sort of Kane role would be Ronaldo for us, who I don't think is particularly well suited for it.
Yeah.
This would be a huge call, and I'm not sure if I would have the balls to make it, to be honest, but I quite like the idea of playing Fernandes in that role and having him on Rodri for a couple of reasons. Yeah. One, because Fernandes defensively isn't very good at staying in structure, so I wouldn't really want him to play much deeper than that anyway.
That's true, yeah.
Second, when we do get the ball, he is the kind of player that you'd want in that Kane role who can move the ball quickly and play really, really aggressive passes into those wide players. And also, he's just better suited to doing that role than Ronaldo is. I think we've had good success with Fred and McTominay in midfield before. I don't know if McTominay is going to be back from illness for the City game. He should be, since we've had over a week.
Yeah.
Or will have had a week since the Watford game. But I think if he's fit, Fred and McTominay go in midfield for me. And then if we're doing this sort of in my head, if you were to play Fernandes in that sort of Kane role, you'd then have three centre-backs, let's say Varane, Maguire, Lindelof, say Wan-Bissaka right wing back, Shaw at left wing back. Then it sort of becomes, who do you play as the other midfielder alongside Fred and McTominay? And then who do you play as the other attacker alongside Fernandes?
Well, are you playing, so are you going with two midfielders rather than two people playing off Fernandes, which could be, for example, Sancho and Rashford?
See, that's where I'm torn, because I'd like to have the extra body in midfield because that is where all of City's danger is. But then just having Fernandes and only one attacker is risky. I'd be tempted to go with...
I don't think you can create enough with that.
Yeah, I'd be tempted to play Lingard in midfield alongside Fred and McTominay.
Yeah, I was going to say. Well, I think because you can play... So yeah, I think you're right. Ronaldo can't do that Kane role, because what was so good about Kane was not just the passing, which was kind of Kane at his very best. He could just do every type of pass and perfect weight and could spot. The vision was great as well. But it was also that close control where Spurs didn't kind of kick it, like hoof it up to him and rely that he'd get it with his head. It was, you play it into him and you know that whatever position he's in, he's going to control the ball. Which was actually, Roy Keane was, to take a slight detour, Roy Keane was saying this on the overlap the other day, that what he loved about Cantona was some strikers ask for the ball, but they don't really want it. But Cantona would always take the ball and always keep it. And Kane's a bit like that in that you can kind of trust him to have the right first touch. And I'm not sure Ronaldo's got that at the moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
and
you
Kane's
play
so
Fernandes.
Good at drawing fouls as well, which really helps break up the game.
Yeah. But yeah, so Lingard could be that kind of disciplined forward defender, but also quick enough and good enough to run off the line in a way that I don't think you can isolate either Rashford or Sancho ahead of Fernandes. I think they just would be too isolated. But the other problem is it does rely on really good wingbacks, and Wan-Bissaka can do the defensive work. Yeah, we've seen that against Sterling time and time again. But in attack, not really. Shaw's not on his best form, so can he do that as well? Could you play Sancho in a kind of weird winger come wingback role, where he drops back to help out when we don't have the ball and the formation changes and he goes forward when we do have it?
Yeah, it's something that's been brought up a lot. To be honest, when I saw the lineup for the Atletico game, I thought that Sancho might be a wingback before I realised Lindelof was playing right back. It feels very tempting as a way to squeeze another attacking player in without compromising the shape of the team. Yeah. You know, it feels really, really tempting. I'm not sure I would want to do it without some sort of insurance policy built into the team that you could change it without needing to make a sub if it started badly. Because as much as I think City's main danger doesn't come from out wide, I still think that if you let them have too much joy down there, even if it doesn't come from crosses, if they're just able to stretch us that much defensively, then it can still really, really come back to haunt you. And I just don't know how confident I would be doing that. And when I mean an insurance policy, I don't know exactly how you would try to do it, but maybe if you could play, say, a midfield that included McTominay and then a back three of Shaw, Maguire, Varane with Wan-Bissaka at right wing back, then maybe you could switch it at some point, put McTominay in at centre back as he's played for Scotland a few times, and then move Shaw to left wing back so that you could change it without making a sub. I think relying on Sancho as a wing back with no sort of insurance policy built into the 11 is a huge risk. But I don't...
Yeah.
I said it's so tempting to do it, to just get an extra attacking player on the pitch.
But what we don't want to do, and what we probably are doing, is the typical Pep Guardiola overthink.
Well, yeah.
The key is the approach, isn't it, rather than the personnel. It's you want those long balls into the channel on the wing, which was very... So, which kind of archetype Ole Gunnar Solskjaer United. Long balls to Rashford or it was to Greenwood or to Martial and Dan James as well. But for that, you need De Gea to be really quick with his distribution and for that run to always be made, even if you don't get the ball. And we haven't been good enough for that recently.
Yeah, which is why Dan James is always so good at the Etihad.
Yeah, get him back. I mean, the truth is, whatever approach we go for, it's going to need everyone to be really on their game.
Yeah.
We haven't had a game where I think everyone's been on it. Leeds, to be fair, everyone was on it, but that was very different. And that was kind of being on it in a different way, not necessarily quality, but really being well up for it.
Yeah.
But I think what we've kind of shown, even though we haven't got kind of a cemented conclusion to how we should beat City, have we? But there is clearly lots of ways you can go about it. So a little more confidence.
And listen, I think...
Given that we should obviously be approaching this non-confident.
I think beating City, to be honest, at this point, beating a team as good as City is half set up, half planning, but the other half is just luck.
Yeah.
You know, and that is completely true. In all of the games that we've played at the Etihad that we've won, we have played really, really well and you know, maybe on balance deserve to win. But it's also relied on City having a lot of the ball and missing a few chances, De Gea making a few saves. You know, it always comes down to that when you're playing against a team and you're willing to let them have the ball as much as I'm sure we'll let City have the ball. There is a lot of luck that's going to come into it because it's basically saying, here, have the ball for 70% of the game and we're just going to trust that with our 30% of it, we can create a couple of chances that are going to be better than the 10 that you might create.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in a semi-confident, probably semi
So what would you do there? To try and get to a cemented answer, how would you approach the game? What would your lineup be?
If I had the balls to do it, I'd drop Ronaldo, play Fernandes. It's not false nine, but like a centre forward, the Kane role. You don't need to give it a label anyway. We've explained what it is. Play Fernandes in that role. I'd probably play Rashford and Sancho off him. The only problem is that's not Sancho's perfect role. So again, it would be another brave call given Rashford's not in form, but you could go Rashford and Lingard.
Yeah.
To get that kind of player who can do a dual role in midfield.
Any thought of Elanga?
Yes. Yeah. But I think I'd go with Rashford despite his poor form.
Yeah.
In defence, definitely Wan-Bissaka over Dalot, I think, even though that it's just a better game for Wan-Bissaka. And he's been doing okay recently, actually. He was great at Leeds. And then Shaw at left wing back, the three centre-backs, there's a bit of me that'd be tempted to go Sancho right wing back, kind of in another dual role where he's a right winger slash right wing back. And then do Varane, Maguire, and Wan-Bissaka as the centre backs. So the other thing is Lindelof is a great passer of the ball out. He can be a great person to play that out ball to the forwards. So you probably do want him in the team.
Yep.
And perhaps you want Lindelof and Maguire and no Varane in this one if you're going to go with Wan-Bissaka at right centre back or Shaw at left centre back. So I'll give you a team and I'm going to change my mind because such is the butterflies before a derby. But De Gea, Sancho in that weird role, Wan-Bissaka, Maguire, Lindelof, Maguire, Shaw, midfield of Fred and McTominay, Fernandes in front, and that's 5-3-2, Lingard and Rashford. I could be talking complete bollocks, but we've been speaking about it for 21 minutes and I feel like I've got into my own head.
So I can see why Pep Guardiola overthinks all these big games now. We've spent 20 minutes, he probably spends like 5 days.
Yeah, you get into a bubble, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of approach rather than lineup, it's long balls over the top, win the ball back regularly without giving away fouls, and yeah, have that deep striker.
Yeah, I think the deep striker is important. I think it's important for us in defence and in attack. I think I would probably go for similar with a couple of differences. So I go De Gea in goal. I would stick with Wan-Bissaka, right wing back. I think he's done so well against Sterling in particular in the past. I just think I don't want to sort of mess that up because he's, if you can get a fullback that can take a player out of the game and against a team like Man City, I want to keep him there. Just the three centre backs, Maguire, Lindelof, Varane, Shaw at left wing back. So they're a bit torn. So I think Fred and McTominay are 100% for me. I think this is the perfect type of game for them. They've both played well against Man City in the past. I actually think Matic has done really well when he's played in the last couple of games, but this isn't the type of game that suits him. I have Fernandes in that sort of deeper attacker role, sort of that centre forward. Then I'm a bit torn. I'm torn because I want Sancho in the team because he's so good at keeping the ball in tight spaces. And that's going to be really, really important against Man City. For us to have any hope in this game, we need to be able to keep the ball when we win it back. So it's not just, you know, wave after wave after wave of City attacking us. But he's also not the best at making those runs into the channels. Like you said, he wants the ball to feet, and the kind of accurate passes to feet is probably not something we're going to have that many opportunities to do against Man City. So I'm tempted to instead go Lingard and Rashford as my two forwards. Primarily because if we need to change, Lingard can come into central midfield and push Fernandes a bit higher up the pitch if we need to, if we want an extra body in midfield. So that would, I think, be my team. Putting Sancho in there at wing back is so tempting to get someone who can play in those tight areas further back, but I don't think I can go into a game against Man City with Sancho as a player whose primary role is going to be defensive.
No, but I think that's kind of the point, is he isn't. It's kind of a back four that it's more of a back four that Sancho drops onto to help out rather than a back five where Sancho is the right wing back in effect. But it is tricky. And the one player we haven't mentioned at all is Paul Pogba, who could obviously do magic things in the way that Harry Kane does in those long balls. But you'd have to change. We'd have to have a whole different system, I think. I don't think he'd fit one of the centre midfield roles.
Actually, I'll tell you what. How do you think Pogba could play the role that we're saying Fernandes should play in, and then Fernandes could be one of the forwards?
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's possible. But we've run out of time, so we should wrap up. I hope that's all food for thought.
Good luck to Ralph, basically. Yeah, is what good luck, come Ralph. Out of that with.
Yep. It could be a good win. I'm expecting not, but we just need to take our chances. And we know we don't do that. So thank you very much for listening, everyone. Patrons, thank you for your support. We'll head into a bonus Q&A with you in a second. We're going to talk about the team's mental state and about Antonio Conte. Everyone else, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your support. As always, if you want more from us throughout the week, you can find Jack on Twitter at...
at UTDTait, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me on Twitter at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Network.